Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine of this soul, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
And I think I'm going to begin taking over the world with just a phrase. The phrase is going to be, that which does not kill me only makes me stronger, and better try again, because after I get back up, I'm going to rip the crap out of it and just take it and smush it into these little bits and pieces of things, sharp and shiny, splattery all over the place, and just like continue to mold them into like some kind of organic goo and glop and take it and put it into it. And then what will come out afterwards will be an engine of destruction, the likes of which the Earth has never seen before. We shall take over the world. We shall recreate it, rewrite it, reinundate it. We shall trepidatious it. We shall use all sorts of other big words that probably are poorly put together and not necessarily put into the right order in sequence, but then we shall take them all together and we shall recategorize them and put them all into little numbers and digits and digits and digits and put them all through a computer system program, which will then take its time to measure out what the world shall be after the zombie apocalypse, and everything shall be just peachy. Welcome to the Afterrod, everybody, in the rest of the huge, big, long side world of the internet. Today we have a guest named Roy. And Roy, I really will apologize right off the bat. I'm going to butcher the crap out of your last name, I'm sure of it. But is it Moritzen?
That's pretty close. That's been the closest most people have gotten with that. Yeah, congratulations.
Yay!
Yep. Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. I always like bringing new people into the game.
And thanks to your listeners. I enjoyed, what was it, about 2 weeks ago, you had Beth on.
Beth has always been a pantload of fun.
Yes, yes.
She's a lovely person with a soul that's colored probably chartreuse.
Yes, or or some shade of salmon.
Salmon? Ah, I can't do salmon.
Can't do salmon?
Can't do fish. Can't do anything that comes out of the water.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, it's not a very pleasant sight afterwards.
Oh, see, and I'm giving up an hour of Shark Week tonight for you guys, so.
Oh, this is Shark Week! Crap!
Yes.
Oh, yeah, EW.
So I gotta go.
I'm gonna give EW his plug for his show afterwards. He has somebody who's in a shark movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'll talk about that later, though, in the show after this.
Okay.
On his Free Pie Night show, which he really likes doing, and having some guests and stuff as well. But that's a whole other ball of wax. That will be in an hour-ish.
Cool.
We're going to talk about Roy. Roy, I understand you are a person who puts words together.
Yes. Yes, that happens. And I'm lucky enough that it fell into a sequence where it actually turned out into not one, but two novels.
And the first one that I saw was called Shards of the Glass Slipper.
That's
something
correct.
About fairy tales.
Ah, fairy tales. But not your Disney fairy tales. These are... These are the dark, twisted origin fairy tales that inspired my novel. So, for example, well, the premise of Shards of the Glass Slipper is basically a bunch of fairy tale heroes have to get together to defeat the evil queen, because every fairy tale has an evil queen. But the evil queen actually turned out to be Cinderella.
Yay, Cindy.
Yep. And they have to basically stop her before she starts a war with Wonderland.
Okay.
Yeah. Wonderland, Alice in Wonderland is one of my favorite all-time stories just growing up. So it was really a lot of fun to kind of dig into that and all the fairy tales and put them together in such a way that I enjoyed writing it and I hope other people enjoy reading it.
Now, I'm pretty sure that there's no relation, but have you ever heard of a comic book company by the name of Zinescope?
Are they the one that did, like, Return to Wonderland and things like that?
They do a whole series of...
Grimm Fairy Tales or something like that?
Yeah, they have a whole series of Grimm Fairy Tales, Wonderland, a bunch of other fairy tale ones. And Cinderella is a psychotic assassin.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you've ever read Fables.
I know of Fables, and I know of the Grimm Fairy Tales one, and They're very different. I mean, they're very both very good books in their own right, but I wanted to make sure that I found my own little niche in terms of telling very famous fairy tales. So, yeah, Fables is good. Fables, I think they have a video game out.
Yes, they do. They have Wolf Among Us.
Right, that's right. Yes.
Werewolves, you know, because like everybody's into the werewolves right now again. But Cinderella in their story is actually she's a spy.
Uh-huh.
It's a fun series. I read a lot of really random stuff, so that's why when I was reading your previous...
I try to pay attention to that stuff because I don't want to really step on any ground that's already been stepped on. And fairy tales are, they've been around forever, so...
That's what I was going to say. The great thing about fairy tale bases is, oh, guess what? Public domain.
Yes.
Interpretation.
That's a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah. But where Fables kind of... flips and kind of does the modern urban fantasy aspect to it, and even I think Brothers Grimm does that a little bit as well too, from what I've seen. And they're a little bit more into the erotica part of it,
which only a little bit.
Only a little bit. Everybody's busty and busting out of their corsets and all that sort of stuff.
It's comic books. What do you want?
Yeah, right. but I actually try to play mine a little bit more. More as a just a straight up fantasy adventure. So if I grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons and reading R.A. Salvatore and Dragonlance and Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So it plays more to that because I mean everything in fairy tales is kind of like that and
not D&D really.
Oh yeah,
seriously, in Dungeons and Dragons.
In the 80s, I grew up with that stuff.
Well, so did I.
Yeah, well.
I was a dungeon master. Woohoo!
Me too. I guess that's why we write stories now, right?
Well, that was always my thing for D&D. I didn't really play a game. I was running a story.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
So
it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Dungeons & Dragons, and I found it very inspiring. So
cool. So with the fairy... Now, I'm assuming that you're into the original, actual, true Grimm fairy tales as opposed to the Disney-fied stuff.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
So it's like, okay, Rapunzel, yeah, she actually killed people. Oh, wait, the thing about the prince and the pauper, yeah, they killed somebody at the end of that. Oh, the Littlest Mermaid, no, she went and bit some bits off the prince. She didn't like what happened after that. Yeah, they weren't necessarily nice.
No, actually, as a matter of fact, when we all think of Sleeping Beauty, we think of like Maleficent and Disney Sleeping Beauty and all that. But in the original Sleeping Beauty, she is only awoken from her sleep, not by her true love's kiss, but by giving birth to her children because she had been visited by a prince early on. And that's what woke her up. So, yeah, that's kind of a little weird. But things were different back then.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the fairy tales were because there's no carry-on of a written heritage or whatever. It was these were spoken word things that were carrying over what they called morality stories. If you go into the woods at night, you're going to get hit by a wolf and eaten.
That's right. And a lot of times, stories like Hansel and Gretel, it wasn't the Grimm brothers... changed up a lot from what they heard. So when they rewrote the stories and they wrote the stories down, they kind of tweaked it a little bit along the way. So it was never the evil stepmother. It was actually the original stories where the mother and father went out and abandoned their children because they could not afford to feed them anymore and everybody was starving. So they literally just kind of child abandonment out in the woods. And that was actually a pretty common thing back in the day.
No.
Yeah.
No, that can't be true. The world was all fluffy bunnies and happy sugarcane stuff back then, right? No, it wasn't like child abandonment and like take the brains of the small unborn child and smash them against the rock. No.
No.
That would just be horrible.
Yep, and that's why it makes for a really good read in my book.
Excellent. So, Shards of the Glass Slipper.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about the slip of the tongue there.
The slip up?
I was trying to not say the glass shitter, but that would be a completely different kind of story that I know somebody's probably written it. I don't want to know about it. So Shards of the Glass Slipper, obviously mm-hmm. taking a lot of its cue from Cinderella's glass slipper, right?
Yep.
Oh, Shards of the... Yeah, okay. And that carries on. Do you have more planned for that series? Is that like a series?
Well, there are two books right now. There's book one, which is Queen Cinder. And then there's book two, which is Queen Alice. And then that continues the story from before. And I get more involved and I get to explore more in Wonderland and all of that. And then, you know, there's some short stories. There's possibly another novel after that. We'll see how it goes from there. I consider myself very humbled and privileged to be able to get this far, even with these two books. So,
well, that's groovy.
It keeps on going. I actually have a prequel short story. You mentioned The Little Mermaid before. That I have a prequel short story that actually is sort of bridges between, since my fairy tale characters are based on the actual fairy tales, this one bridges the gap between the original Hans Christian Andersen Little Mermaid story and where my story starts. So that's it's an interesting little prequel and pretty dark. I'm surprised it dealt a lot with acceptance. There are a lot of very interesting, great themes in fairy tales, and this particular one dealing with the acceptance of the Little Mermaid's father, accepting her as a human now on two legs. And it's somewhat topical as to like things that are going on now, you know, with the whole ruling on gay marriage and all that sort of stuff like that. You know, just coming to terms that your child is off living their life and doing their things. And I was able, very surprised as I was writing it, that I was able to kind of work such a topical theme into what's considered basically a fairy tale story. So,
well, I mean, yeah. No, sorry, I was going into a random location there. Talking about fantasy, classic fantasy. I don't know your experience on fantasy, but when I was younger, I used to read a lot of fantasy. And I mean, for spits and giggles, I won't use the swearing word, but I will usually, and I'm sure everybody understood what I meant. Dante's Inferno, I ended up reading that when, let's see, just before hitting high school, just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the kind of reading I liked. But heavy fantasy, like, I don't know, are you into the traditional heavy fantasy or the light fantasy? Harry Potter I would call the light fantasy, and then the heavy fantasy like Tolkien.
I did surprisingly read. I read a lot of the heavy fantasy. I read Tolkien, a lot of Piers Anthony.
Piers Anthony's early stuff is awesome.
I love the Incarnations of Immortality.
And Bio of a Space Tyrant. And if you ever get the opportunity, read Macroscope.
That sounds familiar. I don't know if I ever saw it or ever finished it. But
it was a space station story, whatever, but the whole idea about moving an entire planet with a super-duper poop scooper.
Okay.
It was just mind-bogglingly, it's like, that's not Piers Anthony, that's just, like, hardcore science.
I've read a lot of that stuff. Again, read a lot of the Dragonlance and a lot of the TSR books from the day. What's up?
A lot of Margaret Weiss?
Yep. A lot of that. R.A. Salvatore. You know, and of course, D&D draws from the classics, going back to Tolkien, going back to, you know, even fairy tales and Wonderland. There's a lot of stuff that when Gygax was putting all this stuff together, he drew from fairy tales.
Gygax.
That's why we have a Vorpal blade in D&D.
I like my Vorpal blade.
Yep.
I want one. Actually, there's also another one called a monofilament blade, which I enjoy when people play with that one. It's a dagger or a sword or whatever that's one molecule thick.
Oh, jeez.
Cuts through anything. It's an awesome idea. I get it. Kind of hard to do, but I want one. I won't lie. I want one.
What kind of scabbard do you put that in?
You don't. Well, I guess you probably would. It would probably be...
How do you carry that around?
Or whatever. I don't know. The one character I read it that I enjoyed, he carried it in his forearm.
Okay.
Like he had a little sheath built into his arm, so it would stay in static place. It would be in alignment with his bone. When he wanted to take it out, just press along the scar and the arm, and then pull the blade out.
But how would you get it back in? I mean, it's only a molecule thing. You got to have really good eyesight to kind of hand-eye coordination just to get it back in, or else you're just cutting yourself.
I'm very sure that that's what that character did. But because it was that kind of series. It's like, okay, yeah.
But yeah.
No, there's all sorts of things out there as far as fairy tales and fantasy. Ever heard of Charles D. Lind?
I don't think so.
One of the early pioneers in what is now called urban fantasy. A lot of the standard fantasy stuff, but set in modern-day Ottawa.
Okay.
Like, he started putting out books, like, about 25 years ago, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whatever. Sorry. Going off topic. No problem. I'm looking at your website here, and it's like, you've got an entire biography of most of your major characters in your series. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I had to figure out who's who and what's what and which fairy tale characters will work for my story and where everybody fits. I mean, everything kind of takes place after the fairy tales, so to speak. So
where are the dwarves?
The dwarves are in there, actually, and it's interesting because in the original Snow White, none of the dwarves have names. And I wanted to honor that, except I had a whole army of dwarves to work with because General Snow White is in charge of an army of dwarves. But I ended up not really naming any of them, so it was kind of interesting. But there's a ton of them, and they kick ass.
Dwarf 1, Dwarf 2, Dwarf 236, Dwarf 4029. Whatever works, right?
Yeah.
So I'm also noticing you've got a whole bunch of computer artwork on these people. Is that your own artwork as well?
Yes, I do all my own stunts. In addition to being a writer, I'm actually a career as an artist. And that kind of helped me sort of explore all these characters, try to visually realize them and stuff. And that way I can kind of, if I needed to, if I was working through something, if I was writing a particular character, I'd, you know, work on a visual reference for them or a scene from the book. So it was a lot of fun, and I actually started doing the artwork before I even started writing the book. I had it planned out, what I wanted to do, kind of, but I haven't actually sat down and, like, started writing chapters or anything like that, but I'd done all this great artwork.
So the Beanstalk War picture, that's one of yours as well?
Yes.
That's cool. I like that one.
Thank you.
And I take it you've done all the artwork for the different book cover stuff, too.
Yes, I wrote and did my own book covers and all that stuff. But and the artwork has gone around to several conventions and shown at several art shows and people, you know, just to kind of gauge the concept and stuff. So, you know, I've shown at sci-fi convention art shows like Icon and Lunacon, which are our New York conventions here. And I've shown down in Atlanta at Dragon Con. So I've gotten great feedback from that.
I want to go to Dragon Con again. I haven't been there in ages.
It's so much fun, but I think it's getting a little too big right now, but it's such a great convention to go to.
No such thing as too big.
Yeah, well, for the venue, it's kind of getting a little bit cramped. they do really well, and it's so much fun. Dragon Con, just amazing costumes that go on. You don't even have to go to a panel. I mean, they have great guests, and they have great panels, but, like, you could just sit there and just watch the costumes go by, and they start Thursday night or Wednesday night even, and they're doing just every night until like 3 o'clock in the morning. The place is packed with just people cosplaying, and it's awesome.
I just remember, and the only clear memory I have is going to the masquerade, not participating, we're not cosplayers, and sitting in the crowd and watching all these people getting up on stage and just being insane. And then after that, something about the Wriggling Sea Snakes, which is a band that did the, what the hell was it? The theme song for Ren and Stimpy, something like that.
Okay.
And they were even more insane because they were half naked on stage. And it's like, whoa, this is getting crazy. And then the other people started coming on, and it's like, this is getting even crazier. And it's like, okay, we're just going to watch this. This is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one time just kind of wandering into a room, and it's like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and there's almost like a pseudo rave going on, and it was just almost hypnotic. That was what was going on stage. It's just fantastic stuff. Dragon Con is like one of those things where, like, I mean, it's, I think it's almost as big as like Comic-Con in terms of its recognition.
San Diego, yes. It's recognized, yeah. But it's not as big people-wise or as event-wise.
Yes.
San Diego Comic-Con sells out like in January and the convention's like this week.
Yep.
So you're talking 6 months in advance. Dragon Con, you can usually still get tickets up until to the day of the event or whatever.
Yeah.
But SDCC usually has like about 250,000 people show up.
Yep.
DragonCon has about 150 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's there, I guess, maybe in terms of reputation, perhaps.
Yeah.
As just kind of, in the top five conventions, DragonCon's kind of up there. And it's definitely worth it. It's a lot more accessible, too. So it's definitely worth it to go down to Atlanta and go into DragonCon, because you could probably do that as opposed to trying to get tickets to San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh,
even
yeah.
New York Comic-Con, I think this past year was larger in attendance than San Diego Comic-Con was. And I went for that at least one day, and it was just, it becomes too much. So
I don't know if it beat San Diego in attendance, because I heard that New York was big, but not as big as San Diego still.
Oh, is it? Really? Because I heard that they were close. I from what I read and heard, it was largely attended, and it was huge.
Now I'm curious.
Yeah. I could be wrong, but that's what I heard.
130,000 people.
Okay.
It may have felt that big.
Well, it smelled that big.
Well, they always tend to smell that big, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, 2014 New York Comic Con was 151,000 people.
Was it?
Yep.
Hmm. Okay.
Patrick Stewart, Todd McFarlane, Bill Nye, and Kevin Bacon as the main guests.
Yeah, yeah, and you had, and forget getting into the rooms to see them. Cause...
Yes, you buy those tickets in advance.
Yeah.
Most conventions like that are like that. The one big one here we have called Fan Expo comes up in about 2 months, and it's the same thing. It's 125,000 people. It's like, what are you, all trying to get into the door at the same time? Jeez.
Yeah, yeah, but I love conventions. Conventions of all sizes, I think they're phenomenal. I think they're really enjoyable, all the great people that you get to meet and see and get up close to. So I've been a guest at several conventions, and I really enjoy that experience.
Cool. So with your series, you've got the two books, you've got some of the short stories I see there,
yep.
And then the artwork you're working on. What are your developing plans? I mean, do you have more that you're going to be doing with the Glass Shards series, or is there other stuff that you're working with?
In development right now, I am scratching away at the third book in the series. At the same time, I have in production, I have that Little Mermaid short story I was telling you about has also been recorded as an audiobook, and that I hope to release a little bit later in the summer.
Did you record that yourself, or did you have somebody else record the voice?
I had somebody else record the voice. And he was actually the person who recorded the narration for the audiobook for Shards of the Glass Slipper, Book 1, Queen Cinder.
Nice.
Yes. So that was a lot of fun for the audiobook. And he'll be doing the second book, Queen Alice, as well. And that's Christopher Morris. He did a fantastic job.
As in Christopher Crosby Morris?
Yes.
I know him.
Same guy, yes.
He's got a lovely voice. He's got cadence to his voice.
Yes.
Because I've heard what he's done with the Heroes in Hell, some of the stuff. So, yeah, no, that's cool. It's that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just lost my thought.
No problem. I'll keep
going. Gosh, darn it. I'm going to have to hit EW with a stick, but that's fine. I got to stop saying because... That's not cool, man.
The audiobook for this one was an interesting thing, because I wanted to do something a little bit different from audiobooks. One, now they've become a lot more accessible to create than they ever have with technology and all that sort of stuff.
Ooh. This is what you got to do different with an audiobook.
Okay.
Smell-o-vision.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Like a scratch and sniff kind of thing?
No, just like, oh, and they were walking along the wood, and when they looked down, they were looking at the stool sample, looking for the... I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's like a multi-sensory sort of experience.
Exactly. Right? You got multi-video, now you can do multi-sensory.
Yep. All right. Well, I'll see if we can go for it. So we can do like Smell Tube instead of YouTube.
The funny thing is, they are actually working on that.
Are they really?
They really are working. Not necessarily on the poop smells, but a smell-o-vision type component to stuff. It's like, wait a second. I don't think I want you projecting smells to me. Well, sorry, you know, I was pulling you off track on there. You were going more back about the audiobook.
No, but it seems like they always go back to like the 50s trends in movie theaters, and they're like, well, the 3D came back around, okay, let's do smell-o-vision next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the audiobook. So trying to do something different with that, I actually, once Chris had done a fantastic narration on the book, and he really enjoyed the story, so he was getting into it with characters and the narrating for it. I took all that sort of stuff, and I guess one of the things that I do in my day job is audio production as well. So I took the 16 and a half hours of audiobook. 16 and a half hours of audiobook.
That's a little bit of time.
And I mixed and mastered it, but I took music, production music that I had to kind of underscore some scenes for it, and I took sound effects and put it as well, so it becomes a little bit more like the old-time radio dramas.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yep. So that was a lot of fun because it really kind of changed the dynamic of the story, and you can kind of get a whole other level of experience just from, you know, adding in that that emotional, powerful music to what some character says, and then, you know, having some awesome sound effect come in, and not only come in, but like pan from left to right because the arrows are being shot from left to right. You know, whatever. But so that was a lot of fun, and that was like, if you think about, you know, you get an album that's professionally mixed and mastered or something like that, and that's an album's about an hour long, let's say.
In today's world, yes.
Yeah. So that's like 16 and a half, you know, music albums that I had to mix all that stuff for.
That's a bit of time.
Yeah, that took me a long time, but it was a lot of fun to do, and I'm looking forward to doing it for the short story, and I'll be doing the same thing for the next book as well. So I'm very excited about it. I'm very proud of it too. So,
well, I would hope you're proud of it, because otherwise, why would you want to keep doing it?
Right.
Seriously, dude. Well, no, I'm just. Yeah.
It's a labor. It is a labor of love, really, for this sort of stuff. But
okay, so here's some of the harder questions then.
Okay.
Ready for these?
I'm ready.
So, Keith, you're just talking about labor of love. Do you do this because you want to do it, or because you need to do it?
Oh, I need to do it.
All right, see? It's in the skin, right? It's like, you got to get those words out. It's like, I can't get any words. I got to get some words out. Right?
Yep. This was this great story that I just wanted to see done in all its forms. So, you know, I sacrificed a lot of D&D nights playing with my friends. I sacrificed a lot of watching TV and, you know, just so I can put this stuff together and get it done. I've actually been working on this whole book since about 2006. So,
all right.
Yeah.
And do you, like,
I'm just a slow writer.
Dude, as opposed, there's different sides of the spectrum there. I mean, Piers Anthony, he puts out like four books out a year. The one time he got into a car accident, well, he was hit by a car. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I'm in bedridden. He's like, okay, I'm going to write a book. He writes a book while he's in bed suffering from a car accident.
Uh-huh. I wish I had that kind of time.
Seriously, the guy can put out the work. I don't know if he's I haven't really seen much in the way of prolificness from him in the past, so I don't know if he's still putting it out, but when I used to read a lot more stuff out there, this was like writing the 9th and 10th book of the Xanth series. It's mm-hmm. like, doosh, he just puts them out. It's like, yeah. Bam. It's like, whoosh, there it goes. But yeah, And then you have the other side of the spectrum. It's like, oh, I'm trying to remember an artist who does thing. Oh, man, Robert Jordan, when he was still with us, uh-huh. he used to take like about 2 years to put out a single book.
Yeah.
But like we're talking a huge-ass book. And
that's a huge-ass book, yeah.
It's like those the are, size those of three are... books, but he still, he typed fast. He just took a long time to put it out.
Well, look at George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, him too.
Still waiting for like book six, I think it is.
Well, it's mapped out from what I understand. It's all ready to almost go. He's told the TV shows, like, this is what's going to happen in the book.
Yeah.
Go ahead and do whatever you're going to do with the TV show, but this is what happens in the book. Kind of thing, you know. It's like, yeah, everybody's going to die. What? We knew that already. It's George R. R. Martin. Now, funny thing about him is everybody mm-hmm. always goes on to the Game of Thrones series. Did you ever read any of his other material?
I've actually never read... See, I have a problem. I have friends that read all the books, so I end up not reading any of them because they just tell me what happens in the books.
Okay, well, he actually had a superhero series.
He did?
Called Wild Cards.
Oh, okay. I've seen Wild Cards, yeah.
Great series. The idea uh-huh. people get infected with a virus and it just makes them superhero-y type, and bam, now you've got a series of stories of people and stuff. They're really well done, but I don't know why it didn't take off better.
You'd think it would nowadays with all the superhero movies and stuff that are...
supposedly some reboots coming in for them, but I don't know what's going on. It should have taken better.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Isn't that kind of what Heroes is? Again, I don't watch a heck of a lot of TV because I'm busy doing other stuff, but...
Heroes, the funny thing about Heroes was it was an awesome first season, an okay second and third season. I think I have to watch the fourth season to get to even remember what it was. Mm-hmm. But it was one of the first superhero TV series. It was pretty good. The idea was cool as heck. Mm-hmm. They just didn't have the application to keep it going. Whereas Agents Coulson, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
right.
and a few of the other things that are coming out now, Daredevil. Oh, my God. Have you seen Daredevil?
No. Dude. But see, this is why I don't see any of these things, because people like you tell me about them.
I won't tell you the show, but the show is freaking awesome. This has got to be the roadmap for how people do shows like that. It's intense. Oh, by the way, for EW's effect as well, Elektra and Punisher are going to be in season two of Daredevil.
Yes.
Like, yay, I'm going to be happy. But yeah, so the Heroes was like that, and then there's all these other mm-hmm. things, and it's going to come popular for a while, and then it's going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way that works.
We'll see, but now CBS is getting Supergirl. That's going to be on. And
Did you see the trailer for that?
Yeah, at first I was like, I don't know.
I know I don't know. It looks so bad.
I didn't think so. The beginning part of it, I'm like, what are they doing? What are they trying to do with this? Are they trying to do like Sex in Smallville or Sex in Metropolis kind of thing, as opposed to like Sex in the City?
I think they're trying to do Alice McBeal in Smallville,
or even that. But I think by the end of it, it looked pretty promising. I think it's very ambitious for CBS, and it's very, I think, different for them. So
ambitious and different, I'll totally give you.
Yeah.
But that 10-minute thing that they put out was, really?
Yeah.
That's the show you want to put out?
We'll see how quickly
okay.
they
can. Yeah. But, and yet, it'll probably do well, and then it'll be like, oh my God, look, it's going to be a popular series, everybody's going to love it. It's like, no, man, can't deal with it. Now, I won't say that I don't like Harry Potter, but I'm not a fan of Harry Potter. I'm using that as an example of the difference between a lower scale form of writing versus a more involved scale of writing, because I was talking about a discussion online where they're talking about, and this is, I'm going to go straight to you with this as well, about magic. In Harry Potter, apparently, and I never read the books, I've only watched the movies, the Harry Potter system, magic, you got witches and wizards, right?
Yes. Sounds right.
I'm
not a Harry Potter expert, but yes.
Okay. And yet, all of their magic is essentially the same. There's no differences. Right. So why is there a difference between witches and wizards?
Is it just a matter of...
sex of the people, apparently.
Yeah. Right? Well, right. Or wouldn't they be witches and warlocks?
You'd think they would be witches and warlocks, but in Harry Potter, it's witches and wizards.
Wizards.
What I would be expecting in magic would be witches and warlocks, and witches would have one type of magic, and warlocks would have another. Mm-hmm. Wizards would have one kind, necromancers another, and a variety. By the way, you ever heard of a writer named Lyndon Hardy?
Maybe not, but I might know titles.
Master of the Five Magics?
I know of that title.
Awesome book, if you ever get the opportunity to read it. It explains magic in a form that's, these are the five different types of magics, and this is how they work. And it goes on with alchemy, thaumaturgy, necromancy, wizardry, and everything else. And explains that the wizardry is about ritual magic, where it takes them 50 years just to make this magic thing that happens that creates a butterfly or something silly enough that kind of thing works like that.
Fireball.
It's intense, well-done type story.
Yeah.
But oh well, I was digressing, wasn't I?
That happens, which is cool.
Well, that's what this whole show's about, right?
Yeah. You know, the thing about magic is you have to set up your rules.
We don't need no... Yes, we do.
you have to... How is stuff when you get into, I guess, writing stuff and you know, you're dealing with spells and whatnot, you have to set up your rules and how your magic system's going to work. This goes back even to running your D&D games back in the day or whatever. I actually made up my own supplemental magic house rules system based off Dungeons & Dragons. So
I think we all did, didn't we?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But you just have to you have to keep to your rules because you have to be consistent and you have to sell it. And I think it's that consistency in magic rules or the laws of magic that make it believable.
Cool. And speaking of D&D again,
yes,
second edition, third edition, 3.5 edition, fourth edition, or fifth edition.
Second edition will always be the closest to my heart because that's basically what I grew up in. And as soon as I looked at third edition, I'm like, I'm out.
Good
so
man.
I haven't touched it since then. So.
Well, fifth edition apparently has put back all the stuff that they took out in the third, fourth, and 3.5.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my favorite thing about D&D was backstab.
Oh, you're a thief character?
I almost always played a thief mage of some sort, and it's like my favorite thing was to jump up behind somebody, backstab, and then slap a spell of some sort on them and just wipe their head off.
Okay.
But it's like, okay, if you can successfully creep up behind somebody, you get the hit, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing that pissed me off when they went to third edition. It's like, no, no, they can have a chance to protect themselves from it. It's like, how? It doesn't matter how you put this into any terms. You walk up behind somebody, they don't know you're there. You successfully navigate through all the obstacles to get to it, and they don't hear a clue. Yeah, I'm sorry, I can stick a knife in your back.
Yeah.
And it'll go deep, and it'll hurt like a son of a gun. And do damage. Yay, double damage.
That's the one thing I didn't like about the third edition, and I hopefully they got back to it, but they... I was able, as a dungeon master and as a creative kind of guy, I was able to do a lot of imagination stuff. So second edition D&D and anything prior to that really relied on you guys actually creating stuff and coming up with stuff. And third and fourth edition really just especially when Wizards of the Coast got their hands on it, just sucked all the we're going to come out with a book for everything. So you don't even have to think about imagining. So you can just sit there and just go back to tabletop wargaming, pretty much. I'm sure there was role playing involved, but it was never the same after that, I don't think.
And that was the main reason they did that with the third and fourth edition is they were selling miniatures.
Yeah.
They were selling tabletop accessories. It was, how do we get people to buy more of our stuff? Hey, let's build a $50 book with all the stuff infinite, and they'll just have to buy more books and then more stuff, and they won't have to think a bit, and they just move their character three spaces up.
Right, and that took like the whole night to do. I mean, there was always a degree of wargaming and stuff like that in second edition that you could do. You had your people, okay, the lizard men are out here, and your archers over there, and your elves there.
Kill them all!
That sort of stuff, yeah. But there was always a creative kind of thing. I mean, the people that I played with when I was playing second edition, they weren't necessarily artists or writers and stuff like that, but whenever they played, they got into it. So they'd write stories for their characters, or they'll draw their characters and stuff like that. And I found that to be a very inspiring kind of thing for D&D. So.
Yeah, one of my favorite ways to do it was the one time I did this one series. It's like, I didn't even give them any rules. That didn't even matter what gaming system we were using. I gave them a 2-page story. It's like, here's your character. That's all it is. There's your backstory of your character. That's it. You don't know what they are. You don't know your specs. You don't know your abilities and stuff. Hey, you want to jump up and shoot somebody in the head? Yeah, okay, you can do it. Oh, guy over here? No, you can't. Why not? Well, you don't have a gun. Simplest question in a story, you know? It's the basic stuff, but it's like it's all in a story and whatever else. And I always thought the D&D was fun. Like, kind of sad when some people start saying, it's the work of the devil, blah, blah, blah. It's like, what are you people?
Crazy. Yeah. Oh, man, I had to deal. I dealt with a lot with that. You know, people were like, they try to get a D&D club going in a school, and they wouldn't do it because, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, so can we have, like, a gaming club? And so, oh, you can have that, yeah. Okay, great. Come on, let's go play D&D now. And, you know, it's just a lot of stuff that just was not true. And what was that with Tom Hanks? Mazes and Monsters.
Yes.
That didn't help.
No, it didn't. But it was still a fun movie.
Yeah. I got to watch that again.
Yeah. There's so many movies I have to watch over again. Last time I checked, there were 17,000 movies that I have to at least at some point either watch or watch over again.
Okay. Well, you probably have a list. On that. Yeah.
I have a list. I'm one of those people. I make lists.
It's got to be a long list. You know, but back in the day, we had like Conan the Barbarian and the Destroyer. We had movies like Willow. We had
Labyrinth.
Hawk Slayer, Labyrinth, Dark Crystal. You know, cheesy 80 movies, Legend.
Love Legend. Legend's one of my favorite fantasy movies of all time.
Yeah. But you had like, and then the really bad ones, which I can't even remember the names to sometimes, but that's what you had. And nowadays, people have, like, you know, the Lord of the Rings 6 movie mega super edition and, you know, Game of Thrones. They have Game of Thrones now. We had, what was it? Wizards and Warriors? Was that an old television show from back in the day?
That is true.
Wizards and Warriors, yeah.
Then there's, you know,
and we had the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, of course.
Yes.
But
which was horrible.
Right. You know, but now we got Game of Thrones, and now we got which has dragons in it, and we have Upon a Time. We have what's the other one? The one in Scotland.
One in Scotland.
Yeah. Oh,
one in Scotland.
Is it Outlander?
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't seen any of it.
Yeah. So, you know, all these great things now that everybody has, but you know, just you had to be more imaginative playing D&D back in the 80s, because you had, you know, movies like Hawk the Slayer.
Hawk the Slayer, oh my god, it's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah. It's
both good and horrible, because that guy's makeup was horrible. Was that the one with a heart bow?
I think it was, yeah. And we had Krull, too.
Krull, I love. Krull, I'll never say anything bad about. And Lady Hawk.
And Lady Hawk.
With that Alan Parsons theme song, or music playing in the background.
That was such a mismatch of music to... I would just... Please rescore Lady Hawk and re-release it, because it's awesome.
I like that score, though.
It's hard to watch them both. I can watch the movie...
He's left our house. Yeah, crazy people were in that movie. I loved it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it is a good time to run an intermezzo, even though it is fairly late. But we'll do it anyways. What the hell?
Sure. Okie doke.
Go for it, EW.
Tales, and he drank my wine. Me and my kind of feeling fine. He had a cloak of gold and eyes of fire, and as he spoke I felt a deep desire to free the world of its fear and pain and help the people to feel free again. Why don't we listen to the voices in our heart? 'Cause they're not only fine, we're not so far apart. Everybody's got to be happy, everyone should sing. For we know the joy of life, peace that love can bring. So
and that, everybody, was Uriah Heep, a band from the 60s and 70s and fun stuff. I believe that one was called The Wizard.
The Wizard?
The Wizard. What a surprise, huh, as it talks about The Wizard. I was going to put Black Sabbath's The Wizard, which was a completely different type of song, but Uriah Heep every once in a while lends itself to a lot of air and that type of... atmosphere. I mean, we used to listen to Uriah Heep when we were D&Ding, so that's why I threw it in.
Cool.
It's one of those songs.
Yeah, it actually kind of reminded me of, as I made a comment, it reminded me of the Ralph Bakshi Wizards movie.
Yep. And I think that actually, that's in the movie somewhere, or not necessarily that song, but the song, some of their music is.
Yeah, and also a little bit of the heavy metal movie.
Which one?
Which one? The only one.
Oh, okay, good. Because FAC 2000 was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Good stuff, though. All these great early inspirations end up, you know, coming out here and there and different things, and I end up writing fairy tale books and doing cool artwork. So.
Now you know that they were supposed to do a third heavy metal movie, right?
I think that's been bouncing around for a while.
No, they did production work on it. It was supposed to have been released about 6 years ago. Ran into production delays, and they still say that they're going to be putting it out. It's like, I so want it to be put out because it looks freaking awesome what they were going to do.
Did you see, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but it's Jordanovsky's Dune?
I have not actually, Jordanovsky's, yes, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Haven't actually watched it, but I do want to. It's just a matter of time and getting it.
Yeah, you should bump that up on your list of 17,000 movies you want to watch.
I know.
Have you seen it? It's really fantastic. It was an amazing little... And it's a short movie, but it was really amazing just what was brewing for that possible Dune movie. Very interesting to see.
Did you ever see the Sci-Fi Channel's miniseries?
On Dune? Yeah, for Dune. It wasn't that bad.
It was good. Like, it was really... It was true to the series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it wasn't... you know, I mean, everybody points to, like, the Dune with the Twin Peaks guy as being, like, the Dune. But that sci-fi series was actually really, really good.
Yes, because the whole weirding way had nothing to do with, hey, let's get some weird sound modules and put them on our necks and we can blow things up. No, it was just a fighting martial arts thing. Which, okay, that's cool. I enjoy, I could talk about thousands of sci-fi, horror, and fantasy movies. I don't think I have time for all of those. Actually,
no.
just as I look up at my shelf over there, let me see if I can find a really mind-mess-with-you fantasy movie.
Okay.
Because I have seen some odd ones.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of odd movies. EW can attest to that. Aha, here we go. Beowulf with Christopher Lambert.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, no, you know, I've always seen, I don't think I've actually seen the, if I have seen it, I've blocked it out.
Oh, it's not that bad.
But, well, he's always kind of, you know, a Highlander.
Well,
that
yeah.
to me is always, and then, but the other one where he's
Mortal
trying to
Kombat.
Escape from a.
Raiden!
Yeah, there's that one. But the other one, he's trying to escape from a prison cell or something. It's like a space prison.
Space prison. Yeah. Power of the Google. Oops.
Yes. To the Google.
Not to the Google cave. Sorry, I hit a wrong button somewhere, and that pulled up something completely unrelated. Lambert, space, IMDb. What do you got for me? Fortress.
That was it. Yep.
I have seen that one. I don't remember anything about it, but I know I've seen that one.
Yeah, see, that's the same way I feel about Beowulf.
There's a sequel to that movie, too.
I didn't pay that much attention to it, but it's no fair because you're on IMDb.
It's no fair. I've got four screens up, so I tend to be an information at my fingertips kind of person. So I know you also did the cover for Heroica, Percy mm-hmm. Press's latest anthology series. Are you planning on writing any stories for their anthologies they've got coming up?
But, you know, honestly, if there was ever a story that I wanted to write, it would have been for Dragon Eaters, which was the first book, but I didn't get around to it. But I'm open to it. But there are a lot of talented writers that are involved, and I would not be worthy of such a thing.
I'm sure you could give it the proverbial giddy go and be just fine with it.
Yeah. But I've done. It's been great working with Janet Morris and with Chris Morris on that stuff. It's been really a blast to do. I've really been enjoying it. Should let your listeners know that I am also the art director for Perseid Press.
Yes, I would. That was part of the lead up to that.
Yes, so I've been handling a lot of their covers and their advertising and stuff, and it's been a lot of. A lot of fun. I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Did you have anything to do with the Doctors in Hell cover?
No, that was a pre-existing run, so they talked to me about that, and I said, you know, I don't want to mess with a good thing you already got going, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been quite happy with, I'm in a couple of the books for the Heroes in Hell series, and I've actually liked all the covers that they've done so far. They're really, it's classic. And, mm-hmm. hey, look, it's new, too. It's all at the same time. It kind of pulls in both sets of elements to it. It's like, that's neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been, and they have a lot of books for that, too, don't they?
Doctors in Hell is the 18th official book in the series for Heroes in Hell.
Yeah. So that's awesome.
Which is part of what I go back, and it was like, for me, it was a big joy to get into it, because back in the 80s, when the first set of books was coming, I was like, damn, reading this stuff, it's fun. And then to be involved with it afterwards, it's like, this is even more fun.
Yeah. Well, Janet Morris, actually, I was very very honored. She asked me to redo the covers. She got back from her, like, back in the 80s, she wrote the Solistra series.
Yes.
And she asked me to redo the covers for them. And I'm like, you know, I'm honored because the covers that that had graced them initially were, like, Boris... Vallejo. He had done the covers for him. You know, she couldn't use that artwork now because of rights, whatever, like
right.
that. So I was very honored that she asked me to step in and create covers for her series for that as well. So,
well, that's cool because Boris Speaking is an of, awesome artist.
Boris is, yeah.
Him and Frazetta. Awesome.
Yep, yep. And so getting back to that whole heavy metal and 80s inspired sort of stuff, but... yeah, so that that was really nice to do. So I'm happy to work with them and help with them, and they like what I do. So
cool.
They keep giving me more stuff.
Hey, the more you can do, the more you can be asked to do more.
Yeah,
however
yeah. So I've done probably about since I did the book covers for my books about 3 years ago. I've done now about almost 60 book covers.
Nice.
For Janet and other people as well. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's getting close to the end of the show. So throw out how people can stalk you.
Sure. I can be stalked on Twitter, at Roy Morrison. Good luck spelling that. And I'm on Facebook. You can look me up, Roy Morrison, or Shards of the Glass Slipper also has a page there. ShardsOfTheGlassSlipper.com is the website.
And Amazon. Don't forget Amazon.
Oh, right, Amazon. Yep, I have both books are available in paperback and ebook on Amazon. And on Audible, you can find Shards of the Glass Slipper, Book 1, Queen Cinder, as well as on iTunes for that as well. And I think
that dreaded iTunes!
Yeah, it's convenient.
It is?
It is. I'm a bit of an Apple guy, so.
So am I, actually.
All right.
Surprisingly enough, Apple puts out good product.
Yeah, I can't complain.
But you know what's really funny is that the evil empire, Disney, is owned by, same company that's involved with Apple. Similar, there are some relationship ties in there.
Okay. I just downloaded the new Star Wars app for iTunes for my iPhone.
Uh-oh. That sounds bad.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. The official Star Wars app gives you all the updated information coming out for the new movie, which is going to be awesome.
Yes, because you know they're going to be putting out marketing material for the next 6 months.
Yep.
Every week, something new. Hey, check out this picture of the new version of a Wookiee.
Uh-huh. Yeah, bring it. My childhood is just coming right back now, so awesome.
I'm just going to ignore most of it and just watch. By the way, are you a big Star Wars fan?
I am, yeah. Not so much the prequels. But I've been watching the new The Rebels on Disney XD, and that's been a very good show.
I was not even familiar with that show. But I was going to go on about the comic book. Did you know that Han Solo picked up a wife?
Oh, yeah, in the new one? Yeah, I saw that. Nah, I don't know. I'm waiting for the next issue to know.
Wait a sec. How the hell did he get a wife? Wait a sec. Did he get divorced? Wait a sec. Is she just some crazy broad? Wait a sec. What the hell?
Yep.
Wait and find out what that's going to be like. It's like, oh, man. Because Lando, there's a new Star Wars Lando series that just started this week as well.
Yeah, they're doing all sorts of... I think they're doing a Leia series as well. Is that in the...
Leia series was a miniseries, 5 issues. Okay. And finished last week.
Yeah. And again, this goes back to... I have all these friends who read comic books and tell me about it, and I pick them up here and there, so I don't have to buy comic books or even pay attention to it. And they're like, how do you know all this stuff? I'm like, well, so-and-so told me about this that happened and stuff. So.
Well, if you're ever thinking about comic books, I usually read a bunch. Matter of fact, this week's list is about 2 inches thick.
Wow. We could spend a whole other hour talking about comic books.
Well, I could spend over 161 hours because that's how an issue number this is. So cool. And that was all that stuff on there. And you've got new projects coming out and stuff you're working on. And so you're in it. Wait a sec. Are you in Atlanta?
No. I'm actually Long Island, New York.
Oh, you're over there.
Yeah.
It's, okay. No hurricanes there today.
No. Some rain, though. But,
yeah, a little bit of rain. Rain is okay.
Yeah. So that's it. Shards of Glass Slipper. That's my baby, and I'm very proud of it.
Excellent. Glad to see it's going to be doing well. I know Janet and Chris like it. They've mentioned it before. And obviously you're getting enough traction to be able to continue having website stuff and content and keep going and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, whatever
you do, don't do an Old Spice commercial, okay?
No. I don't want to do an Old Spice commercial. Excellent. I would like to do, eventually I would like to do, a movie or a comic book series based on the books as well. So
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But now the most important question, which I usually ask earlier than this, but I'm going to ask it now towards pretty much the end of the show. What kind of cookies do you eat?
I am partial to a classic old-school Oreo cookies with a very cold, tall glass of milk.
Okay. Have you ever heard of a Fudgio?
I've heard you talk of Fudgios.
You must try a Fudgio.
I shall, as soon as I get a chance to.
Okay.
Well, at me pretty much wrapping up the end of the show. Everybody in After Rotland, thank you for coming along, listening. Thank you for listening in the archives as it comes out and it spits out in its own little mechanical, whatever kind of thing you want to use, and even as I just make up words as I'm speaking there. Roy, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it very much. I hope you have great success with Shards of the Glass Slipper.
Thank you. And thanks to your listeners.
Yes, because without listeners, what would we do?
Sit here and talk.
Yeah, something like that. And now you can stay tuned for Free Pie Night, because I think Mr. EW has some guests that he's very excited about having on. And with that, I think we will... Thanks, everybody, for coming out. Have yourself an amazing one. And I think we'll say good day.
Thanks.
Of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their pick.